You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
A group of review articles were published just recently in the Annals of Internal Medicine concluding that the literature out there shows nothing. There's nothing you can do to address cognitive decline. Nothing. I really don't believe that. This is super disconcerting to me, considering that most authorities agree that there are steps you can take to improve your brain and to take steps so that you can improve and prevent dementia and as well as Alzheimer's. Now, Dr. Dale Bredesen, the author of The End of Alzheimer's, created a protocol that prevents and reverses cognitive decline, which is what I follow myself. In my clinical practice, hundreds of people improve their brain health, reducing their cognitive decline and even reversing the beginning stages of Alzheimer's. And how do we do that? By recommending that they increase in exercise and movement, improve sleep hygiene, eating a high nutrient dense diet, reducing stress, and working with brain stimulating exercise, and so many more other therapeutic approaches. So today on Wellness for Life Radio, I'm real excited to have Dr. Henry Monca, brain plasticity expert and CEO of Posit Science. He's here to comment on these disturbing review articles, and I can't wait to hear what he's got to say about the truth in human neuroscience and cognitive decline. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Monca.
It's my pleasure, Dr. Suzanne. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know, can you just give us a basic cliff notes about the recent article that was in the Internal Medicine Journal?
Yeah, what happened here is that the National Institute of Aging at the NIH decided to do something good, which is to say, let's have an evidence-based review of interventions that can help preserve cognitive health. And that's a good idea. We're all scientists and physicians and so forth. We want to trust what the evidence tells us. And they asked another government agency called ARC, which in turn asked the group in Minnesota to do the evidence-based review. And then that's where this process went pretty awry, because the evidence-based group in Minnesota, one of the things that they thought was a strength of their review is they weren't really experts in cognitive aging. So they looked at the literature, but they didn't look at very much of it. And what they looked at was negative. And they came back and told the National Institute of Aging that, hey, our narrow look at the literature suggests that there's nothing, not brain exercise, not physical exercise, not diet, not supplements, not blood pressure control. There's nothing that anyone can do that's evidence-based to slow cognitive aging or prevent dementia. And I actually sat in on the meeting in which this result was presented to the National Institute of Aging, and you could just see people's jaws drop. You know, the idea that we've been studying this problem for 40 years, the idea that we spent hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer money through the NIA and got nothing. Nobody believed that except for these folks who had done the review. It was an amazingly contentious process. And what happened next? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, you said that from the people who did the review. My thoughts are like, who are these people who did the review? You said that they're not scientists.
There are scientists. Correct? I want to be fair to them, but they are scientists, absolutely. But they're not specialists in cognitive aging. They're specialists in doing reviews, and they do all kinds of reviews in all kinds of fields. And in a way, they think that makes them more neutral because they don't come to the table sort of with a lot of existing viewpoints. They feel like they can look at the field neutrally. But the flip side of that is they were just lacking expertise in the literature, and in my area, which is brain training. I know for a fact, because I counted them, that they missed more than 90% of the papers that were published in brain training, which is to say more than 90% of the gold standard randomized controlled trials that have been done in brain training were actually missed by this evidence review and didn't contribute to their outcome. So a very bizarre process from where I sit, and that's what led to those flawed conclusions. Everybody knew that they were flawed. At the meeting where they were presented, you know, I saw representatives from AARP and the Alzheimer's Association get up and say, hey, this analysis is useless to us. People call us at AARP every day. They call us at the Alzheimer's Association every day. And they ask us, what can we do to, you know, help preserve cognitive health? And the answer can't be nothing, right? We've learned something. There's certainly more to learn. But the idea that we know nothing now is, of course, just silly.
Well, can I ask you, you know, the review, when did exactly the review come out? Because have they really got any traction regarding this review?
The final review was published at the end of last year, 2017, in the Annals of Internal Medicine, as you saw. The initial draft version of the review was actually published 1 year before, in December 2016. That's when it first went out for this public comment and kind of ran into such a firestorm of of disagreement. You know, does it have traction? I mean, you know, I think a fair number of people saw the news at the end of last year that nothing was helpful. And, you know, I think there were a fair number of news stories and so forth about it. And, you know, just what a dispiriting result to hear. I don't know how you could work at the NIA, for example, and think, well, we've done nothing over 20 years. It would be dispiriting if it were true, but luckily it's not true. Let's put it that way.
Well, the fact that you just said, you know, 90% of it was missed of the different types of research and the truths and the positive outcomes, the results, that's huge in of itself. And hopefully there's going to be another review coming out after this one. And hopefully they'll start saying, hey, we missed some of the good stuff here. But I'd like to ask you, you know, now that you're here and we now know just from what you're saying, that's not true. Let's talk about what is true. Let's talk about the definition of brain plasticity and the work that you've done and giving our listeners hope and what can we all do?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we mean when we talk about brain plasticity is we're talking about the ability of the brain at any age, and frankly, in any health condition, to change, to reorganize itself, to change structurally, functionally, and chemically. And it's worth saying this is kind of a new idea. You know, if you were to wind back the clock to, let's say, 1970, you were to ask neuroscientists, how does the brain work? Every one of them would have said, the brain's like a computer chip inside of your head, and it does computations. And what that means, back in 1970, is that the wiring of your brain was fixed. Now, everyone knew kids could change their brains quite a lot, right? Kids learn languages very quickly. But the viewpoint was that after a critical period, let's say maybe when you're 10 or 11 or 12, you have the wiring you're going to have. And, you know, if your brain gets damaged or you get old, then the wiring is going to wear out. And that's that. There's nothing you can do about it. Now, what happened in the 80s and the 90s was there's just a revolution in the understanding of how the brain works, led by Mike Mersnick, a professor at UC San Francisco, who was my PhD advisor and then went on to found Posit Science. And what Mike realized and showed through dozens and then hundreds of experiments with collaborators all over the world is the brain's not like a fixed computer chip. The brain, in fact, is constantly rewiring and remodeling itself in response to what we ask it to do. When we learn something new, if we practice playing the piano or we learn how to drive on the left side of the road or we, you know, learn to play a new sport, there are physical, chemical, and functional changes in our brain. And that's what we call brain plasticity. And then that led to the idea was, well, if we could harness that, if we could understand how to drive positive brain plasticity, could we help people improve their brain health? And that's the whole promise of this field.
Well, we've actually had on Wellness for Life, Dr. Mersnick, and we had a great conversation about all the different things that
we
can do.
So,
absolutely. Love his information. I've been to his lectures across the country. So really happy to hear that the two of you are working so well to help everyone do better with their brain. I'm someone that believes that you can start from in utero, right? I mean, we talk about it as an infant, but it also even starts from in utero. So let's talk a little bit about that. You know, a lot of the things that I, in my practice, when in my health, my intake, what I mean is the history forms, the one thing that I always add is about memory. And a lot of people and children, they actually have short-term memory loss, subjective cognitive impairment, that type of situation. And I'd like to know, you know, I know that our listeners all want to know, what can we do to prevent that even at such a young age and possibly prevent it in our infants and our fetuses?
Yeah. So, you know, strong memory and in fact, strong any cognitive ability, whether it's memory, attention, you know, planning and executive function, you know, it comes from a strong underlying brain, a brain that's working quickly and accurately. And I think this is one of the things that that people almost forget. When we talk about cognitive abilities like memory, we tend to almost start to think very theoretically, like there's a black box in your brain that's like the memory box and you put stuff in it. But of course, the brain is an organ of your body, just like your liver, just like your stomach. you know, it has, you know, it unto itself can be either a healthier brain or a less healthy brain, just like you might have a healthier liver because you eat well or a less healthy liver because you drink a lot. So those cognitive abilities like memory are going to be governed by your underlying brain health. So the question you might ask then is, well, what controls underlying brain health? What gives a person a healthier, stronger brain as opposed to a brain that's, you know, frankly, in a less healthy or more diseased state? And it turns out that the two most important things are really, you know, how fast and accurately the brain processes information, and then how well the brain can control learning, which we think of as neuromodulatory systems, things like acetylcholine and dopamine and epinephrine that essentially turn learning on and off in the brain. And if we can cause the underlying brain to have faster and more accurate information processing, if we can repetitively engage it in attending and being rewarded, then, you know, the tissue of the brain, the organ of the brain itself is going to be healthier, and then cognitive abilities are going to be stronger. So the question is, well, how do you do that? And, you know, the short answer is the brain has to engage in new learning.
Well, engaging in new learning, I mean, I know I'm very familiar with brainhq.com because I do it myself. And you know, I had a head injury about 8 years ago, and it really took me to another loop. The concussion and the inflammation in the brain really affected my cognitive function. I had trouble with words, retrieving words, speaking to people, my speed of my, you know, I can't believe I'm even doing the radio show now, because back then it was impossible. I would not have been able to function.
I'm talking to you right now, so I'm really impressed.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. But BrainHQ is really about developing those neurological, you know, communication so that it's faster. And to me, it's kind of like you're juicing up your brain, you know? It's really getting like the major energy boost and juice for the brain. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, how does BrainHQ work? And often people would ask me is, hey, what makes it different from, let's say, just doing crossword puzzles or sort of the kind of thing that anyone could do at home? And, you know, the short answer is, you know, you ask the question, you know, I'm a neuroscientist. You know, I you know, got a PhD in neuroscience from UCSF. I did direct brain recordings. And, you know, when you ask the question, what contributes to poor cognitive function? From a neuroscientific perspective, one of the biggest answers is noise in the system. And what I mean by that is, you know, as we get older, sort of through a natural process, or as something bad has happened to our brain, like in your case, the concussion, you can actually see that the brain becomes a noisier information processing system. It's a little bit like an old radio. Radios don't work this way anymore, I guess. But in older days, you know, you have a radio and you can tune it off the radio station a little bit by accident. There'd be a lot of static on the line, right? So that's what happens to a brain as it gets older or after it's been damaged. It has that kind of internal staticky noise. And that causes bad memory and bad attention. And the reason for that is, well, if you are trying to hear something and trying to remember it in a net noisy, staticky environment, it's just harder. You know, if our phone conversation here was through a really noisy phone line, we'd have a hard time hearing each other. We'd have a hard time understanding and remembering what each other said. So if that noise is in the brain, a person's going to have worse cognitive function. And then the question is, well, how can we get that noise out of the brain? How can we bring that radio station back into tune, so to speak? And the answer is not by just asking people to remember things, right? If people have bad memories and you ask them to remember things, I'm not really sure you're helping them exactly. We need to fix the underlying problem. And the underlying problem is making that speed and accuracy of information processing faster and better. And so what BrainHQ does is across really about 29 different exercises at this point is that it asks your brain to process information more quickly and more accurately. It'll give you a big, long sound and ask you what it was. And if you get it right, it'll make that sound shorter and faster. And as you get it right, it'll keep making that sound shorter and faster until it tests your limits and pushes your limits. How fast can your brain operate on this? And of course, if you get a few wrong, it backs up. But it's constantly testing your brain, pushing your brain in that way, just like a good personal trainer at the gym. And that's what makes it different from doing something like crossword puzzles. People think of crossword puzzles as cognitively stimulating, right? You have to think about words to do a crossword puzzle. But it's not really speeding your brain up. It's not really asking your brain to go faster. Frankly, most of the time when you're doing a crossword puzzle, you're just kind of thinking. And just kind of thinking doesn't help recover those basic aspects of brain function in a way that's going to improve the underlying health of the organ.
And then, you know, that's a great point, is that these thinking type of, whether it's chess, playing chess, or Sudoku, you know, the mathematical, the numbers games. So what you're saying is that not only do we want to do the thinking, but we really need to learn on the speed, on how fast, and the challenging, really challenging our brain. Challenging is what takes the, to me, it's, you know, adaptive. Your brain will be adaptive if you challenge more to it, right?
That's right. And it's also really about new learning. The other thing that, you know, when people ask me about crossword puzzles or Sudoku is, you know, most people have been doing those kinds of puzzles. If they like them, they've been doing them for a long time, 5 or 10 or 15 years. And the other thing we know about the brain is that once it gets good at something, it doesn't have to work very hard to do it. So if you've been doing crossword puzzles for a long time, or if you've been riding a bike for a long time, you know, if you look at brain activity, there's not a lot of brain activity. Your brain is so good at it, it doesn't have to work very hard. And that's why what drives brain health is challenging new learning. So, you know, when people come to me and they say, you know, outside of, let's say, Brain HQ, what are the things I could do? I say, well, the challenge here is you have to do new learning. You know, have you thought about learning how to play the trombone? Have you thought about learning Arabic? Have you thought about, you know, moving to a new city for 3 months? So you have to learn where all the good delis are and how the city map works. That's the kind of new learning that the brain really craves to keep it healthy. And I don't mean that facetiously. Those are all good things to do. My own mom learned how to play the harpsichord in her, you know, as not a young woman, shall I say. And, you know, the intensive practice that she had to do to learn how to play the harpsichord absolutely helped her have a healthy brain. But, you know, it's that kind of new learning, not the, hey, I've been doing crossword puzzles for 30 years. I do them for another 30. So my brain's going to be healthy. Well, probably not going to help you that much.
Well, Dr. Monca, you know, what I did myself during the time after the head injury, but I learned how to play the electric guitar. And what was very interesting
is this.
It was wonderful. And it is wonderful. You see, I've been a, you know, just a diehard Carlos Santana, you know, love his music. So I just basically wanted to learn all of his songs. And I got myself an electric guitar. But you see, I'm left-handed. Originally, I was born left-handed. When I lived in Korea, they forced me to write right-handed. So I ended up getting a right-hander's guitar when I first started playing guitar. It was only like for 6 months when I was about 8 years old. I just tried it out. My mom wanted me, being Korean, you got to learn the piano, but I don't want to learn the piano. So I said, let me give me the guitar. I'll play the guitar. Well, I did it. You know, back then they didn't have any left-hander guitars. And this was in the 70s. So actually, what am I saying? Yeah, 1970, because I was eight years old at the time. So then I'm learned it for 6 months and I just gave it up because I really love sports. I'd rather do that. But anyway, this is like what, almost 50 years later, because today I'm 55, I pick up a guitar. And so what I tried to do is, okay, I'm left-handed. I want to get into the left-hander's guitar, and I couldn't play it. I couldn't play it. My brain, since I was 8 years old, you know, it still remembered even just the six months of playing the guitar. It remembered learning how to do it on the left side. I mean, on the right side. So yeah. I had to switch over and train on the right-handers. And now I play such great songs. I'm so happy that I did. Not forcing myself to do something that my body just didn't want to do anymore. It's incredible what your body remembers.
It really is. You can drive very long-lasting changes in the brain with that kind of learning. And in fact, you might be able to know, you know, researchers who've used Brain HQ exercises in long-term clinical trials have seen exactly the same thing. The longest clinical trial that's been run in this field was the ACTIVE study, funded and managed by the National Institutes of Health. And what they showed was, with relatively small amounts of training on speed and accuracy of visual performance in this case, that they could speed up people's brains. And in fact, those people's brains were faster 10 years after training. Right? The training lasted that long, even with relatively minimal kind of boosters along the way. And, you know, people ask me sometimes, they're like, how can you see a brain training effect 10 years after the brain training? Like, how can that be possible? And the answer is the kind of learning we're driving is exactly the kind of learning you experience with your guitar. It's not learning of what we call declarative knowledge. It's not teaching you that, like, you know, Moscow's the capital of Russia, which you might learn and then forget. this kind of non-declarative memory, like learning to play the guitar or speeding up your brain with brain HQ exercises. It drives a very different kind of structural and chemical change in the brain, and one that's incredibly enduring. So you have the effects that you have, like, you know, 30, 40 years later, your brain still expects to play the guitar with a certain hand. And that's just astonishing. But since it's true, well, we should take advantage of it to have healthier brains. And it
Absolutely.
Sounds like you really did. I was impressed.
Yes, yes. I've taken many, many lessons, and it's just been so, for me, it's not just my brain that I'm enhancing. It's my spirit too. You know, when people say, well, your brain is separate from your body, but it's not true. It's so all connected. You want to enhance, and all of those neurochemicals that you develop, it's not just the neurological, nerve to nerve conduction that you're enhancing, but it's actually the brain chemistry and the enhancement and the feelings that you get from it is also very nourishing for the brain.
That's exactly right. So, I'm imagining you during your recovery period, working on learning the guitar in this way, getting back to that. And of course, what has to happen as you do that? Well, you have to pay very careful attention to your finger movements. For example, when you pay very careful attention, your brain releases acetylcholine, right? And then you might play a simple piece of music and you might get it really right. When you get something right, your brain releases dopamine, of course, right? And then something surprising might happen as you're playing the music. You might really notice a beautiful part of the memory. And when surprising things happen, your brain pumps norepinephrine. Well, all those neurochemicals, as well as the sort of detailed work they do in remodeling the brain, turning your brain into a brain that can play guitar, the other thing that all of them do is they support positive mood, right? They support that feeling of sharpness and brightness and mental clarity. And in that sense, they are themselves, if I may speak loosely, they're antidepressive, right? I mean, the reason people get up and they feel like I'm having a good day is because they have healthy levels of these neuromodulators in your brain. And the reason that you have those healthy levels of neuromodulators in your brain is you are intensively working on learning this new thing. So there's this very nice positive feedback cycle. Now, the flip side of it, if I may say, is let's imagine a much worse world where you'd had your injury and you hadn't done that, right? Now, then you have a person who's actually in a negative feedback spiral. They're not learning anything new because they've had this brain injury. They feel nervous. They feel like they're not confident in doing it. And as a result of not learning anything new, well, all those neurochemicals are slowly getting turned off. There's lower levels of acetylcholine and dopamine and norepinephrine because the brain is not learning anything. As those lowered levels happen, the person's mood gets worse. Their confidence gets worse. As that happens, they're even more reluctant to try and work on new things. And so breaking out of those negative spirals, whether they're in aging or as a result of an injury, I mean, that's the most critical part of any brain health program. And it sounds like you remarkably did that.
I was very fortunate to, I did a lot of digging. I ended up writing the book Mighty Mito about mitochondrial health because it really, everything that you and you're talking about, I worked on and I'm still working on it. And the one thing that I also, it's so true. If you don't create action in your life and move towards the positive direction, finding the ways to really help your brain, because not everyone can do the exact same thing. And I find that that's what happened to me. I had to discover all the different ways that will really help my body and efficiently work better. And but what I also noted that was that when I would play the guitar and I felt so great, I would, in a sense, put that in my memory, because if I would just listen to the music that I would play, let's say I'm in the radio and I turn on that music, my cells would charge up as I would be playing. That's the memory. It's really very, very powerful how you can go back to even what you were doing physically while you're playing the guitar or some other type of activity. You can charge it back up just from the memory, right?
Yep. I think that's exactly right. And so the crucial thing in any of these situations is to find something that you love and at the same time find something that's new and challenging in that way. Love it enough that you're going to work through the challenge and then enjoy the benefits of better brain health. And that's exactly right, whether it's after a concussion, after leptic chemo brain, when a woman has had breast cancer, has been treated for cancer, for example, and is having a hard time bouncing back cognitively. It's true in aging. A person retires, and all that challenge and stimulation from the work environment, all that social contact, all that challenge of new work, all that pressure under deadlines, frankly, all that goes away. At first, it sounds like it's a giant relief, But then the brain just starts to relax, you know, like a rubber band unwinding. And unless a person can find something new and challenging that they love, you know, their brain health is also gonna relax and deteriorate as a result of that lack of stimulation. And so thinking about the brain really as an organ in your brain that an organ in your body that craves learning, right? Like, what does the stomach want to do, if I may put it that way? It wants to digest. What does the liver want to do? It wants to clean the blood. And you know, in order to maintain healthy livers and healthy stomachs, they have to do their job in an ongoing way. The brain's job is not thinking, actually. It's learning. And so if the brain is deprived of learning, the brain is going to deteriorate in its health, just the way the stomach or the liver were if it was deprived of its activity. So finding that challenging learning activity that you can love and integrate into your life is really the most crucial part of brain health. And of course, what we try to do in Brain HQ is distill that into something that, you know, people can integrate into their life in a daily way and push themselves and enjoy those benefits.
I know what I think. What you just said is key. You said brain wants to learn, so that's the key to enhancing and having that your brain last as long as we can without having issues with cognitive decline, where you have trouble recognizing phone numbers and faces and all the things that millions and millions of people all around the world suffer from. So. Thank you so much, Dr. Monka. All the information you gave was excellent. Can't wait. And I really can't wait to talk to you again one day about more what we can do to enhance our brain. BrainHQ.com. That's again, BrainHQ.com is where you're going to be able to learn a lot of different types of techniques where there are lessons, there's exercises, and it's really fun to do. And a lot of kids can do it. Very fun for kids. The whole family, and doing it daily will really help you enhance your life, benefit for your brain. All right. Thanks so much for being part of the Wellness for Life community. If you've enjoyed the show, we would love it if you leave us a raving review on iTunes. And don't forget to connect with me on Instagram and Facebook. If you need any help with your personal health issues, I do phone consultation with people all around the world. Just give me a call at 310-315-1514 or email me at dr@drsusanne.com. And that's dr@drsusanne.com. You can get a lot more information about what we do at here on Wellness for Life by going to drsusanne.com, the website. And until next time, go out there and live your best life, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Susanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.